You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
David Montgomery's book, Dirt, Erosion of Civilizations, begins with a quote from Wendell Berry. What we do to soil, we do to ourselves. Civilizations have been creating agricultural land for millennia. What is the correlation between the soil and how it gets used or misused and the future of a society? David Montgomery is a professor of geomorphology at the University of Washington, but this morning he joins us from Exeter, England by telephone. Hello, David.
Good morning.
How important is soil to a civilization?
Well, you know, it's quite literally the foundation for civilization. Something like 97% of our food comes either directly or indirectly out of the soil, and it's the thing we sort of the most take for granted and yet most depend on to maintain our society.
Tell us what happens when a civilization doesn't steward that resource.
Well, essentially, you can think of soil much the same way that you think of your bank account. It's quite literally nature's capital. It's the stuff that's used to essentially finance growing food in a way. And if you think of it in the way that when you think of your bank account, you can think of it in terms of income. There's the way that rocks break down and merge with biological material to make fertile soils. And there's also expenses. There's soils erode. If you're on any kind of a slope at all, or soils will erode at some kind of rate naturally. And there'll come to be a balance between the rate of soil production and how fast soils are built and how fast soils erode. And if that balance is changed, if we erode soils faster than they can be reformed, which has been a side effect of most conventional agriculture for millennia, it turns out, if soils erode faster than they're formed, eventually you can run out or burn through or in plow through the supply of soil that we're naturally endowed with in different areas of the world. And if you look at the time that various societies have lasted for, there's a surprising correlation with the time that it takes to actually run out of soil.
I think some of us, including me, might be carrying on an assumption that what people do actually, up until now, have taken care of our soil, and that the erosion or destruction of soil is sort of a new phenomenon brought on by industrial agriculture. Am I correct in that, or am I under an illusion?
No, you'd be under an illusion. It's one of the most sort of deeply held and long running, I think, illusions we have. We're certainly eroding soils faster than they form today, and the problem has gotten worse as a result of sort of large scale industrial mechanized agriculture. But the idea that ancient societies took care of their land is not necessarily one of the most well founded. And it goes back to the basic invention of the plow, because that sort of fundamental icon of agricultural productivity is something that fundamentally changes the balance between soil erosion and soil production at the surface of the earth. But it does so slow enough that when you're literally talking the loss of, say, a millimeter of soil in net a year under most ancient agricultural practices, it happens slow enough that it takes quite some time for the problem to actually play out. And so that there really has been a problem with many societies, that they may have taken care of their land in some ways and been much gentler on it than we are today in some ways. But the basic problem, that if soils erode faster than they form, is not something that most societies have successfully dealt with.
Which societies, in your mind, stand out as ones that have faced the consequences of not taking care of its soil?
Well, you know, that's something that when I was starting to work on the book, I had inklings about how general the problem was, and I didn't realize how common it was in so many ancient societies. Some of the earliest agricultural societies in the Middle East, where agriculture was sort of discovered among the earliest places on Earth, but also in northern China, ancient Greece, classical Rome, sort of the Mediterranean, Mediterranean Europe, North Africa, Mesoamerica in terms of the Mayans and the Olmecs and the Incas, the many of the societies on islands in the South Pacific. You know, the biggest problem I faced in trying to pull together the research and the evidence for the book was that I wasn't trying to write an encyclopedia book. I was trying to write a book for a general audience to appreciate this problem, and I had just a wealth of examples to draw from. It was you know, at one level awkward, and at another level it was really enlightening to see how common this problem had been.
And then does that have a direct effect on the sustainability of the society?
Well, you know, I think that it does, and I, you know, I want to be clear in saying I don't think that soil erosion itself ever completely destroyed a society, but that it's something that has set the pace, if you will, or the template upon which societies have risen and fallen, and that things such as you know, droughts or floods, wars with neighbors, population pressure induced sometimes, are the things that may actually bring most societies down, but that the state of their land and how many people they population they could support and the area they could do it over have been sort of key ingredients that helped set the pace of the rise and fall of what appears to me to be most major societies.
What's the state of this problem now that we do have very large agribusiness, sometimes, you know, sometimes internationally owned farms, that sort of thing? To what extent has it increased? What are we doing here?
Well, yeah, the whole era of colonial agriculture really accelerated and exacerbated and globalized the problem. I mean, it's if you force me to pick sort of like one major effect that sort of modern industrial agriculture has had on this particular problem, it's to really globalize it and put, you know, most areas of the planet essentially on the same pace. Whereas in earlier eras and earlier societies, you wouldn't have all the major societies in the world in phase. You know, one would rise and take over its neighbors and move around. You know, the whole complicated history of humanity is one of being essentially out of phase with one's neighbors, if you will. At the moment, we've essentially globalized the problem of soil erosion at a time when we also face other global problems in terms of the challenges in dealing with climate change in the next century, the challenges with water and the challenges with population. And so what we face now with this with the problem of how we treat our land is that there's nowhere new to go. There's no new continents to move to. You know, if we've learned one thing in the last decade of looking at learning about Mars, it's that we're not going to go to Mars and farm. you know, we're basically out of land, or new land, and the land that we haven't, that we're, is not under intensive agricultural production today, is land that is not going to be able to sustain it should we try. You know, if we try to convert the boreal forests or the Amazon to agriculture over the long run, it's not going to work very well.
What effect does how does this interact with the problem of climate change?
Well, there's a couple ways to go about trying to answer that. The most immediate of which is that if you look at the problem of simply trying to feed the world, and you project out, say, 50 years, 60 years, the world's population is projected to increase to, you know, somewhere between 10 to 12 billion people, depending on whose estimates you buy, and the amount of arable land is projected to decrease if we continue to lose agricultural land to the problem of erosion, and we're losing, depending on whose estimates you buy, somewhere between 0.5% to 1% a year of arable land on the planet to erosion. You project those two views out, and it's awkward enough, but if you add the problem of climate change, many of our major crops, rice, wheat in particular, are projected to lose something like 10% of their of their crop yields for every one degree average rise in global temperature. And so if we have anything from a 2 to a 5 degree rise coming in the next century, which is sort of the span of the low to high of predictions, it's a 20 to 50% decrease in crop yield while at the same time we're losing arable land. In other words, the problems will exacerbate each other.
Is there a place that we can look for solutions to this?
Well, you know, I think there is. There's one of the writing the last chapter of Dirt was very difficult in the sense of trying to not write a book that was entirely doom and gloom, because ancient societies haven't really learned this lesson of taking care of the land over the many generations of stewardship that it takes to conserve soil. But there are things that we have the advantage of knowing now in terms of hindsight. We have their lessons. We also have the advantage of knowing more about how soil production works, how soil fertility works, and there's two, I think, really big options that we're presented with that give us good opportunities for trying to not only address the problems that come with soil erosion and land degradation, but also that could help contribute to fighting the climate change problem. And one of them that I think is an environmental problem that the United States is actually a world leader in addressing, and that is the adoption of no-till agriculture. Canada's right up there with us, as is parts of South America. But you know, speaking as an American, there's not that many environmental problems that I can claim my government has been leading on for decades. And the adoption of no-till agriculture is one of them. It's the idea that instead of plowing the soil, one would plant back through the crop stubble from last year, and it helps to reintegrate organic matter back into the soil, which helps to naturally maintain soil fertility. It cuts down on erosion, and it also helps to increase the carbon content in soils. You know, sort of three things that we would be wise to do over the next century. And I think that one of the things we'll see over the next 50 years or so is a much more widespread adoption of no-till agriculture as a technology that can really help address these problems. And ironically enough, I think it will be driven more by the carbon sequestration potential than the ability to cut down on the problem of erosion. But the erosion problem will become less severe at the same time. It's sort of a beneficial side effect. And the other opportunity that we have, I think, is to try and rethink how we deal with organic waste streams and returning organic matter back to the soil in sort of more creative ways than the Chinese used to do with the night soil buckets.
David, what do you think that governments can do, either in the way of regulations or initiatives, to push this forward, so the solution forward?
You know, it's my personal opinion that the role of governments in dealing with sort of big picture, long term environmental issues is one that is absolutely essential, because the short term incentives that most economies set up don't favor planning for the long run. And so this problem of sort of, you know, losing the millimeter of soil a year, it is a problem that plays out over decades, if not centuries, in terms of its importance. It's very difficult for individual farmers to be able to manage the problem when they're subject to, you know, needing to have to pay off their loans for equipment for this year, to pay off their fertilizers or other expenses. And so I think that the key thing that governments could do is to actually structure our societal subsidies, the kinds of payments and incentives and rewards we give to farmers for different practices, to structure them such that we reward those who actually take care of the land, the ones that are looking out for future generations as well as feeding the world today. And so I really think there's a big opportunity for rethinking what kinds of practices we actually subsidize and promote as a society, and government's the right mechanism to do it. Because the idea that we live in sort of a perfectly free market system is, you know, I can't characterize it as anything other than polite fiction. You know, we have tax incentives, we have tax breaks, there are subsidies that go to promote different practices. The way those things are actually set up can help structure what people in the end do. And I think there's a lot of opportunities for governments to think creatively about how to use those types of mechanisms. Not so much necessarily saying, you know, the thou shall not approach, the pure regulatory approach, but the advantage of the long time frame that's associated with the soil erosion problem is that, you know, with the right incentives in place over the right amount of time, you could actually sort of turn the ship.
Well, I really appreciate your talking to me this morning. It's been fascinating.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about dirt. It's probably our most valued or most valuable and yet undervalued resource.
You're right there. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with David Montgomery. He is the author of Dirt, Erosion of Civilizations, and it's published by the University of California Press, and that book is just out in paperback.